Push past the finish line with nutrition that fuels you. CanPrev is proudly Canadian and has been delivering supportive natural health supplements for over 2 decades. Whether you're looking for EAAs to optimize your performance or targeted collagen peptides for your post-run recovery, find unique formulas for your unique health needs. Discover more at canprev.ca. When Mark Bomba accepted the head coaching role at Queens in 2020, he inherited a men's program that was decades removed from their last appearance on a national cross-country podium. For the new head coach, the climb back to the top of the mountain had to begin with a strong culture, and his top priority was identifying just one athlete who would buy into the team-first ethos he was trying to build and serve as a pillar for the rest of the team in years to come. Less than 24 hours after that hiring announcement was made, an email from a keen Toronto-area high schooler named Roman Mironov appeared in the new coach's inbox, expressing his eagerness to run in the tricolor kit of the Gaels, and Bomba knew he had his man. 5 years later, the men of Queens are now back-to-back U Sports national champions, with Mironov himself scoring All-Canadian honors to assist the Gaels in both team victories, and Bomba being named 2025 U Sport Men's Coach of the Year. Fast approaching the end of his time as a student athlete at Queens, it's safe to say that the version of the varsity cross-country program that Mironov is leaving behind is a far cry from the one he stepped into 5 years ago, and that the culture he and his team spent years nurturing into a juggernaut shows no signs of slowing down. Today on the ShakeUp podcast, we're joined by Roman Mironov, the captain of the 2025 U Sports Men's Cross Country Champion Queens Gaels, and Mark Bomba, to recap their dominant team victory last week in Sherbrooke and retrace the incredible arc of the program's trajectory since 2020, culminating in back-to-back national university titles. Mark, Roman, welcome to the ShakeUp podcast. So glad you could join us today.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us, John.
Really excited to dive into both this team championship this year, but there is a bigger story to tell, and that's really about the way that you guys have turned the Queens program into a total powerhouse. I mean, back-to-back championships is no small feat. So I think there's no better place to start than with this season and with the events of just last weekend in Sherbrooke. Roman, it's one thing to win a national championship, but it's arguably a more difficult thing to come in the next year and live up to the expectations that you've created for yourself. What was the sentiment like amongst the team heading into this 2025 season, knowing that you were no longer the dark horses and you had that target on your back as reigning national champs?
I mean, I was talking to some of the guys about this, and it's very different than winning last year. Both years we've gone in as favorites into the championships. The difference was last year we still had to do it. And then this year like you said, there's a target on our back. It becomes an expectation. I think for me, I had so much trust in all the guys that were going to toe the line that day. We've trained together for so many years, and every one of them is carefully selected, right? Like, it's not an accident that they're here and bought into the program. So I'd say, honestly, this was the least nervous I've been about a championship, just because I knew everyone was going to do what they had to do, and I was confident that we could show up on the day. And also, I mean, just being my last year, I said this to a few people, I was hoping time would slow down a little bit, try to soak in every moment. And I think that kind of took a bit of the pressure off. It definitely takes away a bit of the excitement.
It brings me to a question about coming into this. You talk about wanting time to slow down a little bit, being that this is your senior season. And we're going to touch a lot on this, hopefully later in the conversation, about the team culture that you've built and why you would want to stretch those moments out with your team. But I imagine during the race itself, at least from the live stream watching, it seemed like time was going excruciatingly fast. Every single time they panned to the chase pack in the pursuit, it seemed like there was a real team battle going on between the Queens Gaels and those white and green singlets of the Sherbrooke Verte Or. How much of a race strategy did the team have going into this race, knowing that they were going to have such stiff competition from the host team? And really seeing that play out during the race, was that on your mind at all while you were competing, knowing that every spot was going to count?
Oh, of course. Always is. I mean, luckily, we have a great relationship with Sherbrooke, I think, and they'll attest to that. Like, we're all great friends, and they definitely push us to be better. I mean, they've been on our minds the last 365 days, right? Since they came second to us last year, that we knew they were bringing on some new guys and they were going to be a deeper team this year. We also knew, obviously, the championship was going to be on their home course, and Sherbrooke has some very passionate fans. I've never seen anything like it. There was a guy with a chainsaw on the side of the course, so you're running through clouds of gasoline smoke, and it was wild. I didn't even, yeah, like you said, time went by so fast. It also, the loop was a bit short. It was only 1.7k, so with a few add-ons. So I think that kind of made it feel like a track race, almost like you're just going around and around on these smaller loops. At least that's what it felt like. But yeah, I mean, you know, the guys that you need to get, and you know, the battles that you need to win. And everyone kind of knows, everyone's got, you know, their guy from the other team that they're eyeing down. But yeah, I mean, you can't think too much about that, that the championships can go any kind of way, right? Like the start this year was a very kind of tight turn into a steep downhill off of a track. Like, it was super random, so we knew we had to get out. And if you kind of got caught in that mix a little early, it'd be really hard to move up later. So, you know, just focusing on your own race, and eventually, as things kind of settle down, you know the target.
Mark, question for you. Knowing the stiff competition you're going to face, particularly from Sherbrooke, and knowing, as Roman mentioned, that this course was unique in how many tight sections there were, particularly coming right off the hop, where you're starting on a track and then funneling almost immediately into a fairly narrow course, what was the advice to the men on the day in terms of how you wanted to see them play out the race?
Yeah, I mean, good question. We knew the way we were going to have to get a good, like Roman mentioned, that was one. And I think last year's course in Kelowna, which was not that dissimilar to the start area, it had its own sort of concerns that we had last year. And I don't think there was, from my side, we were already pretty prepared going in. I think by the time we were going in, it was just tweaking. So like one of the things that I did mention, the only really thing I mentioned to the guys before the race was just to get out good, but then make sure that they were running their own race after that kind of initial start. But other than that, there was no real specific, you know, sort of grand strategy going in. And I think that was the simple reason from my side. And I chatted with the guys about this, but it was like, I knew, and I had this conversation with Roman earlier in the week, but like, just about how to approach this race. And from my side, it was like the day after we won last year, the conversation had already moved to what are we going to do 360 plus days from now? And so that was one of the things that I said to them, was you need to trust that in the back of your mind, you have been preparing for this for 1 year minus a day. And so trust that when you guys get to the starting line, like, you will have the best races of your season. And so from that side, I like full confidence in that their ability to sort of step up, understand, having been in that environment before, having a great veteran leadership group, and, you know, Roman can probably chat about this, but, you know, I had a meeting with our leadership group earlier in the season, and my conversation with them was, after today, we do not talk about defending. Like, end of story. Everything from here on out is purely about preparing and process and how are we going to win again? And so, you know, that was sort of the general gist of things, was we basically spent 2 months just, how are we going to do this? And from my side, that was sort of laying the groundwork to trust that these guys were going to show up on the day.
I was going to chime in. Mark never gives race advice on race day. So for him to come and tell us, like, we knew that was obviously important, and we did get out. I mean, I think I was leading the pack for a solid 400 meters. And yeah, it's all, Mark's all about process. So we've, like you mentioned, this has been in the back of our minds for a year now. And I went into his office earlier last week just to chat a little bit, because sometimes when you're so focused on process, like, you really have to buy into it, right? And it's not always, what's the word? Delayed
gratification.
You realize the wins later, right? It's you really got to be patient with it. And I'd come into Mark's office and I was like, Mark, my season's, it's been okay up to this point. There's not been anything for me to be like, yeah, I've turned a page this year. This is new Roman. Like, let's go. Let's get after it. I mean, I finished 7th at OU's, which was my worst OU's finish in second year. Still a decent race. And yeah, I mean, like Mark said, he was like, well, the focus has always been that one day, November 8th. And yeah, I mean, he was right.
Yeah. Trusting in the process, as cliche as it sometimes is to say, I don't think many programs do it as well as they think they do. Mark, I want to circle back to something you said where the advice to your guys was, we're not thinking about defending from this point onwards. And I think it would be a very easy narrative to fall into, to go into a season as the defending champions and be fixated on repeating and to feel like there's this added pressure. We've done it before. We need to do it again. And I guess by definition, it's a break from what got you onto the top of the podium in a previous year where you're not coming in as defending champions. How difficult was it to get the buy-in from the guys to treat this year like any other year and to run with that chip on their shoulder that they may have had to run with in every previous year up until 2024 when they finally did break through and win that national title?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think 3 years ago in Western, we thought we had a team that was good enough to win. And unfortunately, we had some bad luck, honestly, like no fault of anybody. We had some bad luck with one of our top guys who just ended up with an injury that continued on. And all of a sudden we went from like, we think we can win to, okay, you know, we were in for a bronze again. But honestly, it was pretty easy. I my relationship with these guys and you know, we can speak this later, but, you know, specifically with Roman and Jude, and obviously now them being in their last year, it's just like, it's an easy conversation for me to have with them. And the best part is we've been fortunate enough to have some really good leadership over the last few years. And it's just sort of been a constant continuum. So it's pretty easy from my side, when you've got guys like Roman and Jude who have been there and done that and done this, and carry a lot of weight with the younger guys on our team who are going, this is what we're going to do. And so I have 100% trust that when I have those conversations with them, that they are going to carry out that sort of messaging to the other guys on the team. That would be one. The other side, honestly, and I know you asked Roman this question, but I think it's probably, I'll go back to it, but like last year, honestly, was one of the least, these guys probably don't know this, but was probably one of the least enjoyable coaching experiences of my life, in the sense of, and I don't mean that in a totally bad way, but like we went in as the prohibitive number one team last year. And I think all of us had, like, I had been on teams before that had been contending, but never teams that were supposed to be that assured of winning and carrying that sort of number one ranking from the beginning of the season to the end was exhausting, to the point where when we won, and I mean, we had our, you know, the also was a huge difference this year, but because the men's race was first last year and the women's race was second versus this year flip-flop. But I mean, I remember just being out there and just like, you know, where are we? Where are we? And just, it wasn't until the, you know, even when the final results came out and I just saw the guys at the finish line and I was like, we won. Now I got to go check in with the girls. Like there was no time to savor that. And even having done that, versus this year, it was really relaxed. Like, I think we all, like you were saying about, you know, having time slow down and enjoying the moment. Like this year from my side, if there was one mistake I realized last year that I had made, and I don't think I put the pressure on that guys, but I think we just felt that pressure that we should have, you know, had a really good chance to win the year before, and we did win OUAs, and we didn't, you know, we medaled at U Sport, but we felt, I think we had underachieved, honestly, the previous year. And so, you know, having that chip on our shoulder that we had kind of had the previous years was kind of still there. But it was entirely new territory for us. But this year it was like, it wasn't the concept of being there, we need to defend. From my side, it was being there, we know how to defend. What was, I think that was a huge, change. It was a very relaxed year this year, honestly, like from my side.
So yeah, that subtle mindset shift of being there, having done it before, knowing what to expect. That seems like a theme that's played out and built on itself really since the beginning of your tenure, Mark, at Queens, and no small coincidence, I don't think, similar tenure for you, Roman, as an athlete under this program. We talked a little bit off the top in the intro about you being the first athlete that reached out to Mark when he was announced as the new head coach and being really bought in from the hop to wanting to build a strong winning culture at a school that has always been a contender. But I believe the last podium appearance for Queens was 1996 before you finally made it back on just in the last couple of years. Mark, question for you. It's so difficult to come into any school setting, especially one that has an established culture with longstanding coaching, and take over and try and balance your own personal brand of coaching, your own vision for the program, with all of, for lack of a better word, the baggage that comes with having this history that you're inheriting. And you're trying to do all of this while trying to get results right off the jump and kind of embed yourself within a program immediately. Can you speak at all to the culture of the men's program in particular at Queens when you arrived in 2020 and how it's morphed and changed over these last 5 years with guys like Roman coming up through the ranks?
Sure. I mean, I think our guys side was really lucky when I came in. There was really only two guys who were kind of left over, and that was Miles Brackenbury and Mitch Kirby. And, you know, fortunately from my side, those guys early on committed. Like, they were fully committed. They were fully bought in. And once again, you know, I spent the 1 year out in BC before I was officially on the ground here. And that was, you know, Roman had signed. And so I knew coming in that we had a pretty good solid group who was returning, and Mitch and Miles. But I also knew what I wanted to do, which is what I'd kind of previously done. And that is take one person who's, it doesn't even have to be an off the charts athlete, but I needed a strong character guy who I also knew was talented. That was one. And, you know, I had no idea who this Roman Mironov kid was. He had just got hold of me and, you know, did a little couple Google searches. And immediately the first thing that shows up is this 15-year-old kid who had become an apprenticed barber in the Toronto at the Black Owl Barbershop. And the reason he had become an apprentice barbership for the simple reason is he had badgered the head barber for like 2 years till he finally let him in. And so I show my wife this video and she goes, "That's your guy right there. Like, that's the guy you want to build this team around." And so, you know, I reached out to his club coaches who I knew. And I said, "Look, this is my vision. This is what I want to do. Is this my guy?" And they're like, "Yep, 100%. This is your guy who you want to build a team around." And so, you know, that became from my side really easy to begin to define that culture, because I had three core guys come in who wanted into the program, who were buying into the program, could see the sort of vision that I had. And I, you know, when I sat down with Roman, I said, here's my concept. Here's the philosophy. It's a bunch of guys going to bat for each other. It's team first mentality. It's about relationships. And that's our process. And if we take care of those things, then the performances will take care of themselves. And I remember saying to him, I was like, "I got a 4-year plan. And like, by 4 years, I think we can win." And I think probably Roman at the time was like, "Yeah, right." But you could see the beginnings in that first year. And don't get me wrong, like, it became really easy when you've got young guys like Roman buying in, you've got veteran guys like Mitch Kirby and Miles Brackenbury buying in, and then you luck out. And this is a totally different story, but you luck out with a guy like Jude Wheeler D, who I think, you know, I haven't gone through the record books, but that guy's got to go on as the greatest walk-on in U Sport history. And I think that's the big other thing people don't know is like, this guy was a walk-on in year one. He literally made our team the last day of our tryouts. And there's a great story there. But, you know, as much as you want to go by the vision we had, like, we got lucky. And then you get guys like Roman and Jude coming in year one and are successful. Becomes really easy after that for anyone coming into the program to go, because they just become curious. Like, why have all of a sudden this team in year one, in basically a complete rebuild, like, how are they able to finish fifth at U Sport? How are you able to take a guy like Roman and get him to medal at U20s? How are you able to get a guy like Jude, who, you know, ends up being second at the U20s that year and just missed qualifying for World Juniors? Like, and so it becomes really easy to attract people because they become really curious about, like, what's going on at this little program, you know, that really has no business at that moment in time competing against the more, you know, acknowledged schools in U Sport at that time.
Yeah, there's something in the water for sure. And I absolutely hear where you're coming from, where once you've had that initial success, it does become iterative and it builds on itself. But that wasn't the case for you, Roman. Your first year on campus, it was a gamble. There wasn't those years of massive success where you could look to it and say, this is where I want to go because I want to be the best. And yet you were still the first person to reach out to Mark hours after he was announced as a coach. Take us back to what went into your decision-making all those years ago. What was it about Queens and about the program that Mark was going to be heading for the next foreseeable future that drew you in, that made you curious without having those kind of typical draws that most high schoolers are looking for, like a championship record?
Yeah, I mean, trying to retrace my steps now. Obviously, I knew I wanted to run.
You're going back a long ways.
Yeah, it's 5 years or 6 years, I guess. That was during COVID. And during COVID, running was all I had. Like, it, you know, kind of kept me sane, like I think a lot of other people. I was a huge fan. I spent so many hours watching all kinds of different flow track videos. You know, they tour all the track houses called the Track Shack, which we've named our track house in honor of that.
Of course.
And you see all these different bits and pieces from different programs. And I'm like, this part of the NAU team, like, sounds like so much fun, or this part of the New Mexico team, like, this is super cool. Like, and then I had no idea where I was going to school until Queens wasn't even on my radar because, I mean, at the time there was no coach. And then I heard, obviously, Mark had gotten hired, and I was familiar with Mark because I had seen some Athletics Canada webinar where he basically did a case study on Regan. And his mic was all cutting out.
Regan, video was 2-time Olympian.
Yeah. And the video quality was horrible, but I was like, I don't know. I was bought in. This guy knows what he's talking about. And he gets the job at Queens, and obviously academics were important as well. So now here's a school, great academic reputation, got a obviously Mark, very respected coach. So like you had mentioned earlier, I sent him an email. I think we called the next day, and like he's kind of mentioned, it was a blank slate. And he had said, you know, he just needs, you know, me and a few other guys to buy in, and we can basically make the program whatever we want. So it was a unique opportunity where, like, I got to have a say in creating the team I wanted to be a part of, as opposed to just walking into something. I could take the best parts of everything and basically live out, you know, my high school dream. And Mark's training was interesting. I was bought in. But the other thing, sorry, that I don't know if I've mentioned this to Mark ever, but speaking with a lot of other coaches at schools, obviously I was looking all around Canada and spoken to a few schools in the States. And I'd ask coaches what their goals for their program was. And a lot of them would say something along the lines of like, oh, we want to win our conference meet. And I'd hear that and go, all right, well, that's great, but that's, your conference isn't that good. Like if that's the bar, that's, I feel like we can shoot a bit higher than that. And Mark actually didn't say anything about performance. Obviously he had mentioned that we'll win in 4 years, but that was an afterthought too. You know, you come to a school like Queens, you get to recruit all your best friends to basically build a program from the ground up, develop, leadership skills and everything. And it's going to get me emotional, but yeah. His vision for the program, it wasn't just centered around, right, winning OUAs or, being on the OUA podium or even, the U Sports podium. It was, I feel like it went beyond that into how what we do running collegiately at Queens in U Sport, in the OUA, how that's going to play into sort of the broader sense of our lives and what we're going to take with us, when we're done at Queens.
And has there been open question to both of you, Mark, maybe I'll let you start from the coaching perspective. Do you think that mentality has played itself out in a certain type of athlete being attracted to your program or thriving once they're in your program? We're now a few years removed from when you really had to sell on culture first. You could take the approach of selling on results exclusively. Come here if you want to win national championships. We're the school to beat. But it seems to me that there is something more in the culture of this team that really is team-focused, team-centered. Has there been a particular type of athlete that you've seen thrive in the Queens environment, even now that the success has followed?
It's interesting. It's interesting now. My recruitment emails and even my recruitment conversations are very different than they were, 4 years ago, where it was like, come on in, you'll have a chance to compete. Now it's like, you might have a chance to compete as a first year athlete. But I think the other thing also too is, the overarching philosophy hasn't changed from my side anyways. What's changed is our results.
Yeah.
And so, that's, I think anyone coming into our program now, there's got to be that simple buy-in. And, a few years ago, it was like, hey, come in, we'll help you do this. That's not the messaging anymore. The messaging is, here's our culture. Here's the environment. Here's how we do things. Here's how we are. Here's why I think we are successful. Like, you now want to come along for the ride? Great. Then you're going to come into this environment and you're going to have to buy in pretty quick. And it's not that our guys don't ostracize people, but it's one of those things where they know what they want. They know how they want to do it. And it's like, you're either going to come along for the ride with us or you're not, because we know how to get there and we know our processes and we know how we treat each other and all those sorts of things. And, at the end of the day, from my side, I've always said to them, it's like, you walk out of here a better person, then you'll walk out of here a better athlete.
Yeah.
And that's always been the overarching philosophy that I've always sort of tried. And once again, don't get me wrong, I'm as competitive as anybody, as I always say, but there becomes a point where I'm only so competitive. And if that means, running an athlete through a race because we need the points, but they're going to get injured, like, I won't do that as a bit of an example. And I think, I'm hoping anyways, that the athletes I work with know that, that I'll put their interests first. And there becomes a level of trust, between myself and them in that regards.
You talk about the program culture, knowing what it is now and almost being at this point of self-perpetuation where there's a solid Queens identity of, this is what we stand for. This is the way we do things. If you're coming here, you better be willing to buy into that. Does that differ at all from those early years when you were first on campus, Roman, where the leadership group that came before the coaching change was very small? You mentioned a couple guys, Miles Brackenbury and Mitch Kirby. Did you feel like you had an opportunity to shape the culture earlier on than you may have had if you were to join the team as a rookie now? And maybe you can speak a little bit as well to the role that those guys played in helping cast a vision for the future, even knowing that they weren't necessarily going to be around to see it through to fulfillment, to see the end of that 4-year plan that would hopefully culminate in a championship.
Yeah, I think my answer will also tie in your last question. Running at Queens is not the easy option. It certainly wasn't when I decided to come to Queens, right? There was no team, basically. We had to build it from the ground up. We don't have an indoor track that we have regular access to. We don't even have a 400-meter track. And the weather in the winter here is awful. It's terrible. It's so windy and so cold. So if you want to run at Queens, you have to want it. And you have to be okay with, you know, running a Mona Fartlek up at Fort Henry when winds are howling and it's 1 degree and pouring rain, and it's not always fun, but you know, you have to want it, sort of to come here. And I think in the early days, obviously like Mark mentioned, we had a great group to start with, and Miles and Mitch are both from town. Like, they've run in Kingston their whole lives, and it was good to have them to kind of bridge the gap between the present and sort of the past. Through them, I've gotten to meet a lot of the guys that they used to be teammates with prior to 2020, and they all, like, and we all get along, right? They're always rooting for us. They're always getting messages after races. Like, it's good fun. It keeps us connected. So obviously, knowing that coming into Queens, I knew it was going to be a blank slate, and they kind of got to take what they knew from the past and blend it with what sort of Jude and I wanted for the future. So this idea of sort of team culture being set right now, I think is, like, I'd almost disagree, because I think now that especially Jude and I, or Miles, Mitch, have both graduated, Jude and I are also at the end of our careers, we've kind of given a lot more room for the younger guys to sort of step up and make what they want of the program. Cause I mean, I'm not going to be our next year to see it through. It's going to be their team. And, you know, we both kind of agree that, you know, we had our time, you know, maybe the first 3-4 years, and now it's definitely time to pass on the torch. And I think a lot of things carry over, but I think there's still plenty of room for people to, like, Mark's not really that involved in our team culture. He leaves that up to us almost completely, right? There's, like he's mentioned, there's certain moments where he'll direct us or guide us, or I mean that, but a lot of it comes down to the athletes, and he trusts us and we trust each other. So yeah, I think team culture is always evolving. Every year is completely different, and I think that's kind of part of what's special about it. I think the key principles kind of carry over, that everyone that's here wants to be here, and whatever they make of the team is up to them.
Mark, would you agree with that in terms of the culture that you see?
So what Roman's just said is exactly what I'm getting at in respects to our team culture, right? It is a constant evolution. And from my side, very much, as I often say to them, like, I will decide the size of your sandbox. You get to play within your sandbox, and whatever you create is up to you. And obviously first years, their sandbox is not nearly as big as fifth years. I think going back to what Roman said, probably articulate a bit better, but that was always part of that culture. Like and I go back to all my years of teaching in that sense, and it really impacted how I wanted to define the team. And that is, like, I had a grand overarching philosophy and a set of ideals. They got to figure out exactly what that looked like. And every group and every leadership group was going to be a little different. And those dynamics were always going to be a little bit different. And, you know, from my side, what Roman's just said is exactly the type of culture that I wanted, where you have a strong leadership group that I can trust to basically go, okay, here's the grand vision. Here's how we're getting there. Here's the macro ideas. You guys get to figure out what that's going to look like on the ground. If there's any major problems, then those guys get called in and we have a conversation. I don't have to have those many of those conversations. And it's mostly if there's, you know, I've got a concern because someone's come to me and said something or something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, that was always the overarching concept, that they would be defining the culture of the team, and that I was going to sort of be in here and there and making sure that the general direction of the team was always kind of going. And a lot of those things that come down to a lot of my more sort of one-on-one or small group conversations that I have with them. And I always sort of have been of the ilk, like, you throw out an idea. And as I say, I'm a patient man. I knew that this was not going to grow all in one day. And so for me, it's like, I'll throw out an idea. I will put somebody on the spot to do something. And then they figure out exactly what they want that to look like. And then that begins to define, you know, the environment, their day-to-day environment and how they function.
Roman, you wanted to jump in there.
I think part of, the culture is like taking a step back and letting other people define it. I didn't talk enough about Mitch. Mitch was our veteran guy when sort of we showed up, and he was a bit older than Jude and I and more experienced. He had been in the circuit, for a number of years. And I think he definitely kept us in line the first couple years. When we were a bit younger, maybe bigger headed, arrogant, whatever you want to call it. And he kept us straight. But never like, kind of not dissimilar to Mark. Like, he was never telling us what to do. Instead, kind of just led by example. And Miles, Miles is one of my best friends. We lived together for almost my entire time at Queens, and Miles is probably the nicest person ever. I think that's a pretty unanimous take. And so we had so many discussions about, you know, what we wanted for the team, and always kind of going back and forth on different ideas and disagreeing on things. And, you know, eventually you get this group. And I remember distinctly last year when Miles knew it was his last year, I could tell he was just staying out of it and just appreciating kind of what was going on. And I think I definitely relate to that this year. Sort of passing the torch on to the younger guys. Like, I take a lot of pride in having been part of a program where we kind of got to define the culture in that way. And part of that being that these guys were going to step in, and I was going to trust that if I were to leave Queens today, they would take care of the program, and you know, it would still be what it is today, right? But with their own twist on it. And so that's super cool to see. And I'm definitely a soak up every last moment of it.
It's a unique spot to be in, where you reach the kind of natural end of your time as a university athlete, and you don't feel like there's so much still to do, that stuff that's been left undone, because the team that's coming up behind you is taking the reins and turning it into what they want it to be. And that what they want it to be is something that you can be proud of as you kind of look to the future where you're going to become an alumni. I don't think that that's an experience that every athlete gets, but I think it is a testament, again, to the culture you inherited that you were then able to steward, because guys who came before you gave you the ownership over it, and you had a coach that was willing to give the athletes the ownership over it. And now you get to pass that baton on to the next generation of guys who are going to keep grinding it out in the Queens way, and turn the Queens way into what works best for their specific group. I want to take a moment and get into some of the nuts and bolts. We haven't really touched on the kind of hard training side of how you guys were able to pull off this back-to-back. And I know that that's going to be immensely interesting to a lot of our listeners, myself included. I'm going to put you on the spot again, Roman, here to give it your best shot. You've obviously been working with Mark now for 5+ years. How do you define the Mark Bomba school of endurance training in a nutshell? What is his philosophy? I know that this could get you kicked off the team, but you're so close to the end of your time now that I feel like it's a risk you can probably take at this point, but give it a shot. What's the Queen's method under Mark Bomba?
Mark is, if I could use two words to describe Mark, he's a mad scientist. I can't say that Mark is a volume guy or maybe speed oriented. I mean, we tend to be on the higher volume side of training. Mark always says, run as much as you can without getting injured, as a general philosophy, but Mark is always trying new things. Always kind of learning from what's worked and what hasn't. And a lot of this stuff we don't even hear about. Mark gives us the workouts and we run them and then we'll debrief them, later on, months later. And it'll be like, we ran this double threshold 4 days before this race and look how you did. And then we did a single session like a few days before the next one and it didn't go as good. So now moving forward, and here I'm thinking like, these are just workouts we got to do. Like, we're not really, I don't know about all the experimentation and the testing. But Mark is very individualized with his training. Always trying new things. And sometimes it's hard because you never really know what to expect. But that's kind of part of the fun of it. Where, I can never say that, yes, practices are going to be Tuesday, Friday this week, because Mark could suddenly decide we're going to try and do 3 workouts instead of 2. And so it's this constant back and forth, always testing, kind of new things and iterating. But I think, and Mark will agree with this, Mark sets up training in a way that you don't have to rely on him. Mark and I could not speak for 2 weeks and both of us know like everything is going swimmingly, crushing workouts, like feeling great. He knows what's up. And that's kind of the thing. Like when I went on exchange, was able to kind of, design my own training based on, what I had learned from Mark, and be confident that I was going to come back and still run a good season. I hope that answers your question.
We'll get the full picture of whether it answers it or not. Mark, agree, disagree? Is he hitting the nail on the head?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, people always ask me that question and I'm like, that there's no answer. Like there is no singular answer. Everyone's a little different and I'm always experimenting. And even in the time I've been here, our training's evolved. And sometimes, it's just gut instinct. Like Roman was mentioning 3 workouts. Like we did that, kind of mid season. Most of the time we're just doing 2 workouts a week. And I was like, there's a couple things I just felt needed to be done. And so, okay, we're going to throw in a 3-week session just for this week and focus a little bit more and a bit more speed. And then, then that set up the rest of our season. In that sense, it was one of those sort of gut instinct things that worked out perfectly. Sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. But most of the time, when we kind of do that, it's like, okay. And I often describe myself as a bit of a mad scientist because I'm always tweaking and I'm always looking. And my big thing is, we can go buy the book. And then until it's, till we find people who don't go by the book and then we completely throw it out the window.
Have there been any specific sessions that have been fan favorites, Roman, sessions that maybe you have revisited that haven't gone thrown out the window, that have established a little bit of a reputation amongst the team of, okay, we know we're ready to race if this goes well?
Yeah. First of all, that three workout week, I crushed that week. That week was awesome. I've never been so confident. But also, like, I love kind of the sessions that we were doing. I'm very much a slow twitch guy. I like some of the longer sessions. Like, I like grinding out miles. I think that that week Mark was talking about, our Tuesday session was, I think it was 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, all at race pace. And it was during reading week, so I had to do that on my own. But, like, that was just, it's a tough session, like, especially that kind of the 6 and the 5 minutes there in the middle. Like, you just got to put your head down and work through it. I think Mark loves the Mona Fartlek. And I think we always do that one kind of at a key time in the season, right before championships. And he always has us roll that one. And that's a fun one, because someone like me, who is primarily, a slow twitch and definitely like a slow burn, I'll be trying to push the floats or the recoveries, whatever you want to call them. Whereas someone like Jude, who is a bit quicker, he'll be trying to drop me on the ons. And so we kind of have this push and pull where all of a sudden he thinks he's getting a break, and I step in and I say, no, we gotta, we go now. So that's always a fun one, because you'll have, like Jude, who's a great 15 runner, and myself, who's more of a 10K runner, working out together and kind of going back and forth. So I think that's probably one of our key sessions.
You're a man after my own heart, Roman. I myself have been known to push the pace on Mona Fartlek floats a little bit too much, but it's hey, you got to do what you got to do when you're a bona fide grinder, right? It sounds like you've got a really great crop of young guys who are now stepping up, coming into those workouts, learning the ropes. Maybe they're grinders like you. Maybe you've got some speed guys like Jude. How excited are you for the future of the program that you're now leaving behind as you look to the future, where you're no longer going to be on the cross-country starting line in a Queens uniform in 2026? But what are you hoping for from the group that's following in your footsteps when you look ahead?
They're gonna be better at this than I was, to be frank. I have so much faith in those guys. Especially our, I can't really single any group out. But the current third year guys was a very big recruiting class and was just such a turning point for our program. That's guys like Angus and ERC and Pete, and those guys, who have stepped up big for us. But man, I love spending time with those guys. Angus and Ethan were big names in high school, and we kind of knew we wanted them. And it was very different, because I knew Ethan because we both ran in the Toronto area in high school, whereas Miles and Jude knew Angus very well. And we were kind of going back and forth about, who we wanted more or whatever, and, going to bat for our guys. And they ended up both coming and being roommates. And it was, incredible. Those guys are phenomenal leaders and unique personalities, and they bring a lot, and they're happy to have them both. Now they're obviously stepping up as leaders, and I'd say every year the sort of the second and third years really take the first years under their wing, which I don't think is uncommon for the programs. But seeing how they treat rookies this year, like Peter's younger brother Andrew or Saul, it's cool to see. They really look out for those guys and take good care of them. So I'm stoked to see what the program looks like from the sidelines.
And you're joining an alumni network that sounds like has been equally stoked to watch you guys dominate these last couple of years. Mark, final word to you. Now that you've reached the top as a team, and I think I already know where this answer is probably going to go, but what's it going to take to keep this forward momentum going with new guys coming in every year? And how do you maintain that same team focused mindset that's gotten you to this point?
Yeah, honestly, for sure, Brooke, to graduate some guys, I think would be super helpful, because they're going to be pretty darn good next year. But it's, it's the same thing. Like you sort of going back to earlier, like Mitch Miles set, you know, in place a certain tone. And then, you know, Roman, Angus, Jude, Tanner, like all these guys have kind of inherited those similar mindsets. And, you know, it's the one thing now where I see such a difference from, you know, Roman's first couple of years where guys have people to look up to. You know, that's huge. There's those role models, there's mentors there. But I also think now there's a certain expectation, not of performance, honestly. Like, you know, we'll get into this and I'm sure those conversations will happen about trying to win again. But honestly, at the end of the day, like it would be awesome. And I, like I said, and we'll talk about it, but it's not the biggest of goals from my side. Right. From my side, it's knowing that the people who are coming in are walking into a team that, yeah, it can contend every year, but more relevantly are walking into a team where they're going to learn what it takes to be successful. And that's sort of what I was going back to earlier. Like every team's going to be a little different, but there's continuity there. And there's a continuum of the concept of paying attention to the processes and how you treat your teammates and what's expected of you if you come onto this team in respects to your work ethic and setting, you know, high individual goals, not, you know, and by that I mean not just performance, but more along the lines of like setting those high goals about I'm going to do the little things and I'm going to make sure that I'm at all practice and I'm going to make sure that, you know, during homecoming weekend, I'm not out, you know, carousing, and getting in too much trouble. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we always say this, like, we want you to come here and have a great university experience, 100%, but you got to pick and choose your spots. And I always used to say that when I taught, it was like, maturity was, and I say this to you guys from my, I was like, maturity is not being an idiot. Maturity is knowing when and where you can be an idiot. And that's really one of the things that we talk about. It's like knowing when and where to choose your spots. And I mean, those are the things from my side, the larger concepts of the culture that's in place now that does get passed down. And that goes back to what I was saying before at the very beginning about when I was talking to these guys about my belief in them, that being a group who had been there and done that, that it was not the concept of going and having to defend. It was the going back to the concept of knowing how to defend was way more important to me than actually defending. Like if we would have lost to Sherbrooke, and they're an awesome group of guys and their coaching staff's amazing. And you know, great deal of respect for those guys. Like I know it was pretty funny this year's championship and even last year's championship. You know, I almost go to those Sherbrooke guys before I go to our guys. And I'm basically like, you scared the living, you know, daylights out of me out there because I'm looking at the scores and even this year's group where with a mile to go, they were 11 points down. And I was like, geez, like what's going to happen? And, you know, we had a few guys who put the hammer down the last mile and, you know, we ended up winning by a fairly comfortable margin, but you know, it was not that close for majorities portions of that race. But you know, when I said the concept of defining a culture, that's kind of what kids who are walking into our program now, like that's kind of what they know they're getting themselves into. It is that attention to the process and the concept of being a better person and the idea of you're going to come in here and you're probably not going to be a leader in year one, but you're going to learn from one heck of a good leadership group. And, you know, the interesting part from my side, it's really interesting, you know, and I'll single out one guy specifically, but like Owen Danby, who came into our program, is not a heralded recruit. Like he was, you know, he went to school or he was in the same group as Angus and so on. And, you know, having these conversations with him, but he bought in early on. And it's super interesting for me to get feedback from athletes who now look at Owen as a second year athlete. So, I mean, last year, not even this year, but look at him as a leader on this team. And like, those are the sort of guys, like, and Owen was our seventh guy at U Sport this year. But those are sometimes the people on our team who don't get the notoriety, who kind of fall a little bit by the wayside when people talk about our program. But like a guy like Owen plays as an important role as a Jude and a Roman, even though he's a little bit younger and he's not as experienced. And I know that because I get that feedback about how he treats his teammates and how his teammates actually look to him for advice, because he was coming in. He was not a highly sought after recruit. He came in with decent high school times, but you know, and where to see now where he is now and how well regarded he is within our group is like, you know, that those are the sorts of people we want. And those are the sorts of people who define our team as much as the people who get the awards and the accolades for winning or you know, doing this or doing that. It's often those unheralded guys on our team who have as big an impact on our younger guys as some of our older guys do.
The success that you're building is one that seems like it's less contingent on just pure talent. And the type of success that's sustainable is the type that starts with doing the little things right, buying in to a commitment to team, a commitment to emphasizing those big goals that you set out collectively as a group. I love that you mention that you want your guys to have a great university experience and that it's a balancing act, as it is for all student athletes, of knowing when to play those cards and when to hold back and keep the bigger goals in focus. Tough to make an argument that you could ask for any better university experience than to have a double national title coming home to Kingston. Roman, I'm sure that you would agree with that as you look back on your time. We wish you guys all the best for what's coming up next for this program. I know that it's just the beginning of a lot more great years to come. Thanks both for taking the time to be with us today. This has been such a joy.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Another huge thank you to Roman and Mark for joining us this week to talk all about the historic repeat gold medal performance of their Queen's University Gaels at this year's U Sport National Cross Country Championships. The Canadian Cross Country Championships are just around the corner, and Canadian Running Magazine will be on hand as your source for all the news, highlights, and storylines as Canada's best runners vie for a qualifying spot on the national team, headed to the World Cross Country Championships in Tallahassee, Florida. Make sure to check out runningmagazine.ca and at Canadian Running on Instagram for all the stories you won't want to miss. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Shakeout Podcast. While you're at it, make sure to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a thing. That's it for this episode. I'm your host, John Gay, saying thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you again soon for your next Shakeout.